Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and my guest from Australia today is Reverend Mark Leach. Mark was with me in April this year, so if you'd like to pick up that podcast, please go onto the free High FM app. And if you look under Sue Jackson and put in Mark Leach, you'll find our previous podcast. This time, I can see you, Mark. I don't have a blank screen in front of me. Welcome.
Thank you, Sue. It's lovely to be with you again and to be with all your listeners. And I hope it's encouraging and helpful for all of us.
Well, it certainly is. You know, Elie Wiesel said, "Religion is not man's relationship to God. It is man's relationship to man." And that is very much what you have been striving to do in Australia. Now, Mark is a founder of Never Again Is Now, which hopes to show the other, to show the normal Australians, and all Australians actually, that anti-Semitism is not acceptable, and it is never again is now. You know, Mark, last week or the week before, I had Hillel Fuld on my program, and he was speaking about being denied a visa to Australia, and also not to mention that his brother had been killed by a teenage terrorist. So welcome. You're in Australia. Tell me about how you are feeling.
Well, actually, I interviewed Hillel just after his visa was rejected. He's what a fabulous person and inspiring, and also sad story with his brother. And of course, the silver lining in his visa being denied was it meant he was at home with his family when the war with Iran broke out. So, you know, there was some upside there. How am I feeling? Look, when all of this started on October the 7th and we started Never Again Is Now, I traveled around and I was saying to everyone, you know, we need to gear up for a 20-year battle. This is not going to go away anytime soon. When you look at the history of ideas, how the institutions in the Western world have been captured by the radical left, the march of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamists around the world and their coalition with the left. And I thought, you know, this is going to be a long fight. I just wish I wasn't being proved right. It's every time you think it can't get worse, it does. The levels of hatred against Israel and the Jewish community, and you know, this crazy notion that you can be anti-Zionist but not anti-Semitic. You know, it's a difference without a distinction, or distinction without a difference. There's no difference there. Seeing the scale of anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, anti-Semitic sentiment growing in Australia is depressing, to be honest. It's a tough season. Yeah, but as I always say to folks, say, "Mark, you know, how are you doing? How do you cope with all of this?" I go, "Listen, I'm not in a tunnel in Gaza. This is, you know, like, really, this is not that hard. Come on, saddle up, gear up, we'll be fine."
And we'll get back to that shortly. Just hang on one sec.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and my guest, who's just been dancing on the screen in front of me to that advert, is Reverend Mark Leach. Mark, you had your own community, your own parish, and as an Anglican minister, but your upbringing was very different. Can you share it a bit with people who didn't hear you last time? And we have new listeners all the time, and I love your story.
Oh, gosh. Well, I was born in Zambia, in a little village up Choma in Zambia. My mum was and her parents were refugees from the Holocaust. They fled Germany in 1938. South Africa in 1937 had stopped taking in Jewish refugees, and they ended up in Swaziland, now Eswatini. And Swaziland, Eswatini, took in 150 Jewish refugees, and my mum and her parents were three of those 150. So thankfully, they were not sent back to Europe, and they survived the war in Swaziland. Like most German Jews, they were very secular. My grandfather had fought for the Germans in World War I, a decorated military veteran, so they never thought that, you know, anti-Semitism would affect them. Anyway, we all know how that story ends. They end up in Southern Africa. My grandfather's a doctor. My mum became a doctor, went to Wits back in the 50s, one of the few women and a few Jews. Ended up in what was then Southern Rhodesia, married my dad. My dad was a white Afrikaans guy, Roman Catholic, English Afrikaans, mixed heritage. But dad had fought as a mercenary, and then he smuggled emeralds and diamonds. He smuggled emeralds out of Zambia and Rhodesia, Zim, and then diamonds from what was then Southwest Africa, Namibia. And so I didn't have a very religious upbringing, quite secular, full of challenges. I mean, it was Africa in the 1970s and early 80s, as I'm sure some of your listeners will remember. That was, you know, was somewhat wild time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, different era. And then as a teenager, we'd move to Cape Town. Dad was in jail. He was in jail with Nelson Mandela, I like to say.
Oh, yes.
For less noble reasons, depending on your understanding of Mandela, so they overlapped in Polesmoor for a season down in Cape Town. But I was invited to go to this Anglican youth group by some friends from school, and the youth group had this one important thing that my school didn't have, and that was girls. So I went to the youth group and I met girls, but I also met God in a very powerful way that... And an understanding that there was a God who loved me and who loved us, and that all the pain and the hurt and the trauma of my early years, while it wouldn't be removed, there were healing and hope was possible. And so I came to a deep personal encounter with God, and that led me through medicine. I studied medicine at UCT. And then ended up moving to Australia to study theology and become a physician of the soul. Mm-hmm. And all along, you know, I just think our humanity is fulfilled when we connect deeply with God. And that's a very, I mean, I also think, just so your listeners know, I've been convinced ever since the get-go that Christianity is Jewish. Jesus was a Jewish rabbi in the first century. I've never had any difficulty really understanding and thinking and living the two parts of my identity together. So
you say that you've got double guilt.
I said that double guilt. Yeah. The other line. The other line I use is, I say I identify as 100% Christian and 100% Jewish and just bad at maths. And, you know. And unfortunately, you know, then the Christian, I mean, I found this over my experience in the church, is Christianity has a terrible history of anti-Semitism, as we know. But it's a bug, not a feature of Christianity. If you call people back to Jesus, you can't hate the Jews, because he was Jewish. He's a Jewish Messiah, we believe. So, you know, I just keep calling people back to the Jewish Rabbi Jesus. And now trying to help bring everyone together and push back the hate in Australia and wherever we can, yeah.
And you know, Mark, last time I was asked to ask you if your mission is to convert Jews to Christianity. And you said no one had ever said that to your face. So I'm saying that to your face now, because it was another question that came through. It seems to always come through.
Is it my mission? No, my mission is to make anti-Semitism unthinkable, to renew our commitment to Western civilization, and to do that as an act of love, not just for the Jewish people, but for Australia and for future generations of Australia. So I don't think it's my mission to convert anyone. That said, I have lots and lots of conversations with all kinds of people. If people want to talk to me about my particular understanding of Jesus and how I understand Jesus as a Jew and how all that fits together, I'm more than happy to have that conversation. But I always wait for someone to ask me and invite me into that. And sometimes, look, some Christians think I'm not Christian enough. You should be, you know, you should be aggressive. Yeah, and then some of the Jews think I'm not Jewish enough, and that's fine. It's okay. Like, life's not a popularity contest.
No. Tell me about your brother.
Oh. my brother. Yeah. So look, I found God, or God found me. Unfortunately, my brother had no spiritual connection whatever in his life, and he was 2 years older than me, ended up going, was conscripted, went into the army in 1985 when South Africa was fighting up in Angola. So and as I'm sure many of your listeners would know, it was a horrible, horrible war. And my brother's name was Paul, so Paul went up there. When he went into the army, he was 17, and they were fighting up in Quito, Cuernavaca. He was caught up in that battle, went missing in action, eventually got out with PTSD. The army psych said, I'll offend your Afrikaans viewers by trying to imitate an Afrikaans psychiatrist's accent, but basically said to him, Paul, you've got this PTSD. There's nothing we can do about it. It'll get better with time. Mm. And of course it didn't. So his life became quite difficult over many years. Lots of stories there, lots of pain, lots of heartache. He was addicted to drugs and alcohol. And if any of your listeners have ever lived with an addict or someone with mental illness trying to self-medicate, it's deeply destructive.
Really?
But in the end, he ended up converting to Islam. He was living in Cape Town, in the Hanover Park, which is a very violent colored part of Cape Town, and he converted to Islam as a way to try and find some structure and meaning in his life. So he and I used, and he was a bright guy. So, and he was sober. I think he was sober at that point. So we used to have endless arguments about theology, and I'd say, Paul, you're the only Jewish Muslim in Cape Town. What are you talking about? You idiot. You know, anyway, he then got murdered, which was tragic.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, it's a classic tragic South African story, just a random, they stole his bicycle.
Sad.
And the gang, you know, they shanked him with a sharpened bicycle spoke. And you know, the police just were like, yeah, we have 75 open murder dockets, and we know who did it. No one's going to testify against them because it was a gang. And so that was the tragic end to a tragic life. Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, Mark. I didn't realize that when I asked you. I wanted you just to bring in the Islam part to show what a mixture you came from. Rosh Hashanah, New Year, is a time to show appreciation and to thank people.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Mark Leach. If you have any questions or you want to be part of the conversation, please SMS us or WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. I'm always terrified I might be giving you the wrong number, but it's correct. 061-895-1019. Mark, I came across this saying. It said, if God puts a Goliath in front of you, he must believe that there's a David inside of you. So tell me about your David, the David inside of you.
Yeah.
It happened on the 9th of October, the initial part.
Yeah, look, you know, like so many of us, I watched the events of October 7 unfold in shock and horror. And then on the 9th, the morning of the 9th in Sydney, Monday morning, my daughter Freya called from Sydney University and said, and she's very involved in student politics, and you know, all kinds of things now on media. And she phoned me and said, Dad, the pro-Palestinians are planning an anti-Israel demonstration in Sydney. We should do something about it. So I phoned the police and I said, look, this is an unauthorized rally. I want to do something. I want to protest. This was, you know, less than 48 hours after the massacre of October 7. The blood hadn't yet dried. They were still chasing terrorists around south of Israel. And so I phoned the police and I said, listen, I want to do something. And the police said to me, well, Mr. Leach, we're keep telling the Jews to stay out of the city of Sydney today. And this was the day, you know, the famous opera house in Sydney was going to be lit up in blue and white as an act of solidarity with Israel. So they said, no, we're keeping the Jews out. And if you come into the city, we can't guarantee your safety. And if you try and do anything in the city, we will arrest you in order to prevent a breach of the peace. And so I just, you know, thought to myself, well, you know, blow that. And I went in anyway, put on a clerical shirt, looked all religious. And the rally started in the square in the center of Sydney between the town hall and the Anglican Cathedral. So I took my squash bag, I rolled up a big Israeli flag, and I stood on the steps of the Anglican Cathedral and watched 1,000 of these very, very angry, mostly young Muslim background men and women yelling their chants of hatred, you know, calling for the cleansing of Israel from the river to the sea and, you know, F the Jews and all this sort of stuff. So I took out an Israeli flag and I stood on the steps in the middle of this crowd and I waved the flag. And a bunch of about 20 of these kefir-wrapped thugs chased me out of the square, threatening to slit my throat. And I ran around the cathedral and hid behind a police van while they dispersed the mob. And you know, I did that. I did that to not just to show solidarity with Israel, because I'm even though I wanted to do that, but I wanted to shine a spotlight on the hatred that was there and say this is un-Australian, that we have to stand against this, and we cannot let the center of our greatest city in Australia be captured by jihadists calling for the death of Jews and celebrating October the 7th.
And so, and so you know, soon, yeah. Also, I mean, it was so soon after the blood of Israel had not even dried yet.
Yeah, and the IDF hadn't gone into Gaza. No. There was no, you couldn't even go, oh, this is the atrocities of the genocidal settler colonial regime massacring plucky innocent Palestinian children. It's just pure hatred of the Jews and of Israel. And I thought, you know what? We have to stand. The Christians in Germany did not stand up against Hitler. 20% supported him, 20% opposed him, 60% stayed silent and allowed their neighbors to be rounded up to death camps while they sang their hymns in church. And I thought, as someone who's Jewish and Christian, I cannot let that happen in Australia. So as far as it was up to me, I had to stand and say, no, we will make sure that everyday Australians stand against this kind of hatred. Because make no mistake, Islamic anti-Semitism is a direct continuation of Nazi anti-Semitism. Mm. There's no daylight between the two of them. Mm. And we have to stand against it wherever we see it.
So tell me about the Never Again. I see a message has come through. Where are you from? Mark is actually from Sydney in Australia. We're speaking. He's on the screen in front of me. Last time I couldn't see him, he could see me. This time we can smile at each other and he can dance during our adverts. Mark, tell me about Never Again and how that started.
Yeah, so after the events of the rally and me standing up and waving a flag, I got you know, all the media in Australia covered it. And then a few friends of ours, a couple of friends of mine, one of whom's Luther, you know, one's Lutheran, the other's Jewish background. And so we sat down and we said, we've got to do something. We thought, well, let's run rallies around the country led by Christians, inviting the Jews to be part of it, but just to assure them and to show the country that the non-Jewish community is appalled at and opposed to anti-Semitism. So we started Never Again Is Now. We registered it as a charity. We set up a website and we organized these rallies. And the first of which got 10,000 people out in Sydney. And then we did them all around the country. And then I looked around and I thought, I seem to have started this national movement, because lots, you know, your average Australian thinks this level of hatred of the Jewish people is just wrong. So by the middle of last year, I quit my church and went full time into leading this movement. And it's become this, you know, grassroots movement from the top of Australia to the bottom, from the East Coast to the West Coast. And we're just building a grassroots movement to combat hatred and stand together for Western civilization and for the Jewish community. And it's been quite an extraordinary journey, I have to say.
And for Freya, your daughter as well. I saw a video or YouTube of you and Freya talking in America.
Yeah, yeah. So we have friends in the States, so we were invited to go and be keynote speakers at a big event in Times Square, at one of the theaters in Times Square. To tell the story of what we were doing to encourage and mobilize Christians in New York to stand up against anti-Semitism. And Freya, yeah, she's a remarkable young woman.
Absolutely. I was blown away by her.
Well, she now has her own show on Sky News in Australia on a Sunday afternoon. She's four nights a week co-hosting another show. She has a very significant media profile as a 22-year-old in Australia. So, you know, and just getting the message out to young Australians that, you know, as young people, they have to have a moral conscience and they have to understand the issues and stand up for our civilization and our culture, yeah.
So have you got many Jewish followers in a part of the Never Again? It's now?
Yeah, so our vision has always been to bring people together. So I would say our database is probably 50% Jewish and 50% non-Jewish.
Isn't that wonderful? That's like you are.
Yeah, well, that's you know, I think that's, I don't want to be all spiritual, but I will be. I think that's what God is doing. Mm. It's, you know, Melanie Phillips, the English writer, said she wrote this book, Cornerstone, something like that, and how Jews and Christians can save Western civilization. And that's my journey as well. And I think when we work together, because we're singing off the same song sheet, we worship the same God, we understand, we live the same values. I mean, the values of Christianity, of life, they're the values of the Torah, because it's Jewish, right? So, yeah, so everything we do, we try and bring people together. Like, we've got a trip, I'm leading a mission to Israel in November.
Oh, yes.
And half the group's Jewish, half the group's Christian. Huh. And I thought, you know, the Christians often go and do their religious pilgrimages and the Jewish community go and do their Jewish thing. And I thought, why don't we do it together and see how that works?
So, you know. Wonderful. Gosh, if I'm in Israel at that time, I'll be there. Just,
yeah,
Mark,
absolutely.
Now tell me about your reaction to the Harbour Bridge and tell me about it. I mean, it's such an iconic, beautiful bridge in Sydney.
Yeah.
And 90,000 people with flags, yeah, and even Ayatollah Khomeini photos. I mean,
photo,
really,
yeah,
marching across the bridge.
Yeah, look, that wasn't really a highlight. I think it shows. So what the propaganda has done is it's presented a very simple story. Israel are the bullies. The IDF is committing genocide. Countless thousands of kids are being killed. And if you want to be a good moral person, you should do something about it. And Australians are compassionate people. And that relentless messaging has been remarkably effective. You know, a terrorist death cult who rape and murder and behead as a feature of their ideology have managed to get tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of liberal Westerners to identify with them and side with them against the only liberal democracy in the Middle East. So look, their propaganda and their information war has been spectacularly successful.
And Israel have failed at that.
Yeah, look, people say that. Give them a break. They're fighting on seven fronts. And, you know, I just go, I'd rather they kill terrorists in Gaza than they worry about social media. We can win that war on their behalf. I think the diaspora community,
absolutely,
and the non-Jewish community, we need to step up and fund this and engage and win the battle of public opinion. And we've got to just let Israel go. I mean, I can't go into Gaza and take out terrorists, but I can mobilize public opinion in Australia and in the Western world. So that's what we should do.
And we don't have to be the bystanders. We can talk out very deeply.
Yeah, man. and talk out one heart at a time, you know, and just tell a better story. We've got a better story to tell. We shouldn't be afraid. The worst that'll happen to us is we won't be popular. We might get cancelled. So what?
Were you very surprised at the number that were marching?
I was surprised and a little disheartened. But, you know, I don't know if you followed in the news. Australia's just discovered, our intelligence services have discovered that the Iranians...
And that was my next question to you.
...have been behind a lot of the anti-Semitism. So that what we're seeing around the world is a global information war and campaign to divide and destroy Western democracies from within. It's funded by the autocracies of the world, Russia, China, Iran, and Qatar. And this campaign has been coordinated by the Muslim Brotherhood and the KGB and the Communist Party since the mid-70s. We know that. It's well documented. And it's just been building relentless momentum. And there, in Australia, millions and millions of dollars are flowing into this propaganda war. And now we know the IRGC, the Iranian regime, is also operating on our soil. So I wrote an article and I said, you know, the Free Palestine movement is a proxy of the Iranian and the Qatari and the Muslim Brotherhood forces in Australia. Like we have to own that and see it. And I imagine it's the same in South Africa. Mm-hmm. It's the same in Canada. It's the same in the US. So we're at war, you know, it's a war for our civilization.
Were you very surprised when your Prime Minister Albanese actually admitted to the Iranian involvement? I see it was he admitted it to right from the beginning on the Opera House steps.
I'm not surprised. We've had a lot of this movement, Never Again Is Now, it's very broad. So we've had a lot of Iranians involved in our movement right from the start. And they all hate the regime. They're here as refugees. So, and they would all tell me, and anyone who'd listen would say, the IRGC are operating in Australia. They target dissidents around the world. They intimidate, they gather intelligence, they recruit agents to act for them. So, was I surprised? My question is, I wonder how long our Prime Minister knew about the Iranian involvement, and he just sat on it until it was most politically expedient to announce it, you know, so because he's a very, I mean, whatever people might say about our Prime Minister Albanese, he's a very, very shrewd and astute politician. So, you know, he'd just said Australia's going to recognize Palestinian statehood. That's a sop to the left of Australia and the Muslim vote in our western suburbs of Sydney. And then 2 weeks later, he says, but I'm a strong Australian and I'll expel the Iranians. So that plays well to middle Australia and then tries to say to everyone, look, we're a strong government. We're taking action against anti-Semitism. So I wasn't surprised at all, but I'm very glad he's done what he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know that your organization was also putting out billboards. And are you still doing that?
Yeah, so we ran a campaign around Anzac Day. So Anzac Day is this day in Australia where they remember all the people who fought and died in the various wars Australia has been part of. And what many Australians don't know is that as a percentage of the population, the Jewish community had more volunteers in the First and Second World Wars than the non-Jewish community in Australia. So Australian Jews, while a small group, very loyal. Our most famous general, Sir John Monash, was a Jewish general, incredible person. So we ran this campaign around of mobile billboards, reminding people around Anzac Day that Jewish diggers fought and died for Australia, so we should now stand up for the Jewish community. So that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. And also, I think percentage-wise, Australia probably accepted the most Holocaust survivors. So you have these generations with the intergenerational trauma having to face what's been going on with the marches.
Yeah, look, Exactly. So Melbourne in particular, and then Sydney afterwards. I think Melbourne has the highest per capita percentage of Holocaust survivors of any city outside of Israel. Hmm. And so, yeah, the level of trauma is enormous, and just fear that this could happen again. And it's stark. You know, we have quite a few Israelis in Australia. The difference between the Israeli response to this and the Holocaust survivors and their descendants in Australia is quite marked. So just this enormous sense of vulnerability, of shock. Mm. You know, like, how could Australia turn on us like this? Does everybody hate us? I had a conversation just this morning with someone whose father was a Holocaust survivor, and they sat down and they said, you know, do we need to think about leaving Australia? You know, so this is a conversation many Jewish people in Australia are having, which I think is tragic.
It's absolutely. Now, my friends in Sydney, Judy and Les, thank you for this. This is a newsletter, an open letter to Justice Belinda Rigg about the Bridge March, and it came from Linda Ben-Menashe. I'm sure you did not intend to enable more exclusion, social division, hate speech, or incite to violence when you overruled the government and the police to enable this march. She's talking about, of course, the Bridge March. And it says, Dear Justice Rigg, I'm writing as president of the National Council of Jewish Women Australia to express the views of my board about your ruling to allow the March for Humanity across Sydney's Harbour Bridge on Sunday. While I and so many others in my community are heartsick about the ongoing war between Hamas and Israel and the plight of the hostages and of Palestinian civilians, and while doubtless the motivation of many of the participants was indeed humanitarian, sadly, the tone and the optics of the march turned out to be exactly as we feared. We're going to get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Reverend Mark Leach. Mark, you're going to be listening to a very short audio clip by it's called Reagan's Legendary Heaven Joke, and it's especially for you.
From the joy and the good feeling of this conference, I go to a political reception. Now, I don't know why, but that bit of scheduling reminds me of a story, which I'll share with you. An evangelical minister and a politician arrived at Heaven's Gate one day together. And St. Peter, after doing all the necessary formalities, took them in hand to show them where their quarters would be. And he took them to a small single room with a bed, a chair, and a table, and said this was for the clergyman. And the politician was a little worried about what might be in store for him. And he couldn't believe it then when St. Peter stopped in front of a beautiful mansion with lovely grounds, many servants, and told him that these would be his quarters. And he couldn't help but ask. He said, but wait, how? There's something wrong. How do I get this mansion while that good and holy man only gets a single room? And St. Peter said, you have to understand how things are up here. We got thousands and thousands of clergy. You're the first politician who ever made it. But I don't want to contribute to a stereotype.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Mark Leach. He's in Sydney, and I'm in the studios in Johannesburg. Thank you, Craig, for keeping us on air. What, wasn't that good? I was hoping you would enjoy that one. A good laugh, at least, in a serious subject afterwards. You hang on.
Storyteller.
Just say that again. You broke up for a minute.
Yeah, Reagan. Yeah, that was fantastic. Reagan's a great storyteller. He was a great storyteller.
He was. He really was. I was reading Linda Ben-Menashe's letter, but I just want to say that anyone who would like to read this of themselves should go on to, it's an open letter to Justice Belinda Rigg and about the Bridge March, and it goes on and on. And the one Iranian-born counselor, Tina Kordrostami, posted, "We fled our country for freedom of speech, choice, and identity. Today, thousands march on our bridge alongside supporters of the regime who took this freedom away from us. Make it make sense." And to paraphrase an Iranian dissident academic who spoke at an Iranian Jewish woman's lunch that they had organized, it said, "The cognitive dissonance of seeing people who just a few years ago stood up for women, life, freedom, now standing with those who deprive women of their lives and freedom is truly mind-blowing." And nothing is ever said, is it, about the hostages or what the 7th of October, the massacre of the 7th of October.
Yeah, look, I'm a massive fan of freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. So I completely defend the rights of people to say what they want, even if I experience it as unpleasant, uncomfortable, completely deluded. I think free speech is the best antidote to lies. And allow people to have their say. And then we have to compete with the battle of ideas, and we have to mobilize everyday Aussies. My experience around the country is the vast majority of Australians would not support the march and do not support terrorism and do support the Jewish community and oppose racism. So I'm pretty optimistic, but I think we need to fight. This is a battle. And we've got to fight for free speech and for Western liberal democracy all around the world, because that's the big battle that we face. And anti-Semitism in the Jewish community, that's the warning light on the dashboard, right? That's the current symptom of this deeper cultural problem. So I thought with the march, like, let them march. That's great. Let's not all get hysterical about it. I thought it was unhelpful, and but we've just got to beat them at the game of truth.
Absolutely. And last Sunday I was listening to an iman. So I happened to just be scrolling through the TV, and I came across this iman, and I thought, let me see what he's saying. And he was speaking in Cape Town, and he was about to catch a flight out of South Africa. I didn't hear the beginning, so I don't know where he was flying to. But he was asked what he thought of South Africa and the Muslims in South Africa. Now, he was speaking in Cape Town. And he said, which I thought was it's very much what we're feeling here in South Africa still, but I don't think in Australia or certainly not Britain. He said, you've got to celebrate that you are able to practice your religion as Muslims in South Africa. No one's harming you. You can go out in your hijab. You can wear your uniform with pride, and no one will attack you. And I thought to myself, that's coming from an iman. And I wanted to say, there have been a lot of cars driving through Sea Point with Palestinian flags and what have you. So it's not always the same for the Jews in Cape Town. But I did feel at least he was saying that it is safe. And I think that's what we have to look for us as Jews to be safe, and as Christians to be safe, because it's not always easy to wear any kind of garb that or jewelry that says that we're Christian or Jew.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think that the problem we are all facing is Islamic, it's jihadist Islam that will use the freedoms of the West, of association, of speech, of religion, and so on, to then infiltrate and undermine from within until they're in a position to dominate. So one of the things I say that deeply upsets me is I go, You know, I mean, Christians through Africa are being massacred. There's a genocide going on in Sudan. There's a silent genocide going on in Nigeria. And the world is silent. No one cares.
No.
The re-Islamization of Africa from the Arab North down is underway, and it's violent. And so I get very, Christians, it's hard to motivate the Christian community globally to stand with Israel when they won't even stand with their own fellow religionists in Africa. You know, we're all too occupied with our own, our mortgages and our movies and paying the bills and keeping our marriage together. But around the world, there's real evil that's happening, and good people can't stay silent as much as we'd like to. And we can't just hope someone else will fight these fights for us, because the battle will come to Sea Point. It'll come to Sydney. It'll come to, Joburg. Like, that's what's happening. So
very definitely.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and our time is really going very quickly. And I'm with Mark Leach in Sydney. If you would like to send us a message, please do so on 061-895-1019. I saw very funny, but a lot of F words in it, Instagram post, or was it LinkedIn, I can't remember, from this John Martin. And while his language was very colorful, I would suggest that you go in and have see what he has to say, because he has the courage to actually view that horrific video that is now out on the atrocities of the massacre. And he speaks about that. And I think it is something that not everyone can watch, I must admit. My daughter-in-law, Leanne, books for her and I to go to every single survivor talk, every survivor who's here in South Africa. And that's our way of showing support and hearing a story. And we've just had Orr Levy, who was starved, shackled, and it said starved, shackled, and still standing, and tortured. And it said, the hostage who came home to his orphan child. And it was quite amazing. And he spoke about the few days that three people, hostages, joined them in the tunnels. And Hirsch Goldberg Pollen was one of them. And he said how Hirsch said to them, he who has a why to live for can survive anyhow. Or said it came from Viktor Frankl, but actually it's a Nietzsche's saying. And he said that he kept reminding himself of what was his why, and his why was to get back to, he thought his wife would still be alive, but she wasn't, but to be back to his child. And I think we have to listen to these stories. We can't turn away from them. Turning away is also being a bystander, but we've got to go in at the level we can go in, not to be so shocked that we become helpless victims of the atrocity.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen some of the footage, I remember when, and my daughter Freya saw the whole 47-minute video, I remember. Why didn't the Israeli government release that, the whole 47 minutes, to the whole world? I think the whole world would have just said flatten Gaza at that point. When you see the evil and the orgiastic glee with which thousands of civilians poured across the border and raped and killed and delighted in the evil, I think once you see that, you go, it's a miracle that the IDF is as restrained as it has been. Like, honest to goodness, you go, having experienced that, having seen that. So yeah, I think we can't forget, and we can't let non-Jewish people forget. We have to keep bringing it back, that remember October 7th, remember the hostages. This is how it started. Remember the history. You know, this is not some brave, plucky resistance fighters against oppression. This is a This is a satanic evil death cult committed to the eradication of the Jewish people. So don't ever let anyone forget that. But it comes at a cost, doesn't it? I mean, it's like the vicarious trauma we experience watching it is tough.
Absolutely. And I'm being told to wrap up, Mark. It's been so nice being with you. That's such a silly word, actually, nice. It's been an absolute honor to be with you. Would you like to end by saying anything?
I would say this, that as a person of faith, I really do believe everything under God will be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's because it's not the end.
Absolutely.
So hang in there, be strong, be brave, and we will win.
Amen to that. And Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks said, "We are as great as the challenges we have the courage to undertake." We're going to be listening to a song that's not going to come through on the podcast called "Let My People Go Now, Bring Them Home, Israel Chai." Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Craig, and thank you, Peterson.